Hello and welcome. Today is Wednesday, January the 18th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, President Obama makes a stunning commutation of a transgender military documents leaker.
Maybe the outside world can make accommodations for the transgender person, but I'm not so sure that that's the job of the prisons.
Donald Trump arrives in Washington ahead of Friday's inauguration. A new report on what happens if Obamacare is repealed. Also ahead, a hot new song taking the music world by storm. It's all on today's International Edition. President Barack Obama has commuted the prison sentence of former U.S. Army intelligence analyst Chelsea Manning, who leaked hundreds of thousands of military documents to anti-secrecy website WikiLeaks. Manning was sentenced to 35 years in prison in 2013. She'll now be freed in May. She's among 209 prison commutations and 64 pardons Obama issued Tuesday as his presidency draws to a close. Most of the others were serving sentences for nonviolent drug offenses. Chelsea Manning was formerly Bradley Manning when he handed over more than 700,000 classified U.S. military documents to WikiLeaks. They included battlefield reports from Afghanistan and Iraq and State Department cables. Joining me now for analysis, criminal defense attorney Ken Perry of the firm Perry and Oronin. The pardon of Manning has stunned a lot of people on both sides of the political spectrum, Mr. Perry.
You know, I have like these really mixed emotions. To the one hand, you know, it's, I look at what the stuff that she leaked. And granted, I haven't seen it all. I haven't read it all. But I know some of it was in the nature of a whistleblower type thing. And I have a problem with her getting all this time for what effect, you know, what amounts to whistleblowing while the people who were implicated in it did not.
Are you referring to Edward Snowden, who's in
Russia? I'm talking about the people who were implicated in the documents that she released. You know, there was all that stuff about helicopter attacks on Iraqi civilians, and reporters showed videos of the bombings in Iraq. And it really put America in some very bad light.
Hmm.
And that's not the same thing as giving away secrets. While I'm sure there were also secrets, you know, you have to, where are they drawing the line? The part of her giving away secrets is despicable, and on that ground, she should not be commuted.
What would be the precedent for what the president did?
I don't think there really is a whole lot of precedent. I mean, you know, he has the power to do it. He, you know, from what I understand, they've been citing the fact that, you know, there was an acceptance of guilt, and he went through the system, and that's how they're trying to differentiate Manning away from Snowden. I think that's more, sounds to me more of an after-the-fact rationalization than a real consideration.
Well, I heard the president's press secretary saying that Chelsea Manning stood trial, admitted wrongdoing, and apologized, and served time, whereas Edward Snowden ran to an adversary country.
Yeah, I mean, and that's true, but how far does that go? If in fact he was guilty or she was guilty of violating the Espionage Act, which is some of the counts that she, then that is pretty serious. And the fact that admitted guilt, does that ameliorate, does that erase the harm of what she did? I don't think so. But on the other hand, to the extent that it was a whistleblower in showing these things that needed to be shown of what America was doing wrong, that shouldn't be penalized. So you have that really mixed message there. Yes, Snowden ran away to an adversarial country and should be punished with that. Agreed. What does that have to do with whether Chelsea Manning should have her sentence commuted? I mean, she wasn't pardoned. She was just sentence commuted.
Right, exactly. So that means she'll virtually be free 28 years early, I believe it is.
28 years early, yes. But she still was found guilty. That was not wiped.
My understanding is that since Bradley Manning decided to be Chelsea Manning and live as a woman, as a transgender woman, she's been housed in a male federal prison and has made several attempts to commit suicide. Do you think that this whole gender issue may have played a role in the president's decision?
They are citing that as one of the reasons. that she, you know, is not necessarily safe in a man's prison. But call it as you may, and I know this sounds completely unpolitically correct, she's still a man, at least physically. And when you're in the outside world, maybe the outside world can make accommodations for the transgender person, but I'm not so sure that that's the job of the prisons. Because either way you play it, whether you say, okay, she wants to be a woman, she identifies as a woman, therefore she should be in a woman's prison, well, that causes problems because physically she's still a man. On the other hand, if you say, yes, you know, she should be in this man's prison, well, if she's identifying as a woman and given what happens in prisons, that's not safe either. But do either of those choices overrule the right or the requirement that government enforce its laws and protect the country? If you assume that she committed espionage, then shouldn't she be punished for that? And, you know, and I'm obviously playing both sides here because I think both sides are right to a certain extent.
Presidents are known for, in the very end of their terms, doing pardons, giving commutations. This president seems to have done quite a few of them. And what do you think is behind this mad dash to commute and pardon so many people?
I was sitting and thinking about that before, about what would be the reasons to commute Chelsea Manning's sentence. On the one hand, I can see the legal arguments for doing it, which is, you know, it was whistleblower. She's not safe in the prison. It's more than enough time for what she did. That's the one side. But, you know, on the other side, if you assume that she's guilty of these crimes, why else would he have done it? There's a certain amount of angst being created in the Republican community and in the, I imagine, in Trump's camp about all this. And I can't help but think there's a certain amount of jabbing going on, if you know what I mean. I mean, we're talking about WikiLeaks. I mean, her leaks to WikiLeaks sort of made WikiLeaks into what it is. And if you take the way that the government has been reacting to this whole last cycle, given, you know, the Russian hacking and all this stuff and all the release by WikiLeaks and all the yanks that created in Democratic circles, it doesn't necessarily make sense that he would have done this unless there's some other reason.
That's criminal defense attorney Ken Perry of Perry and Ronan. Thank you so much for being with us. Well, the Manning commutation has been a hot topic on social media. Joining me now for more on that and what's trending, social media reporter G. Abby Lee. Hey, G.
Hi, Lori. The Chelsea Manning commutation is, of course, one of the top trending stories. And like you mentioned earlier, the transgender woman will be freed in May 2017, and the new release date is a lot sooner than previously said, and that's what's driving the social media chatter. Michael Rosten, who works for the New York Times, tweeted, "Miss Manning is set to be freed in 5 months on May 17th of this year, rather than in 2045. Let that sink in." Other people wrote, "With the latest commutation, Mr. Obama drove a wedge between President-elect Trump and WikiLeaks."
Well, speaking of President Obama, Tuesday was the First Lady's birthday. What's the buzz going on about that?
Yeah, the outgoing First Lady celebrated her last birthday at the White House at the age of 53. Mr. Obama wrote this on his POTUS Twitter account. "To the girl from the South Side who took on a role she didn't ask for and made it her own. Happy birthday, Michelle. I love you."
Aww.
The BET, which stands for the Black Entertainment Television, also wished her a happy one.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm.
So what else is trending?
The Endangered Species Act is trending because the Republican lawmakers are vying to roll it back. Democrats, on the other hand, are touting it as one of the most powerful conservation tools of the U.S. government. The act was passed nearly unanimously in 1973 and helped the bald eagle to avoid extinction.
Wow. So why are the GOP lawmakers trying to change that?
Because they believe the act impedes drilling and logging, which can lead to hindering industrial development. But the Democrats are saying if we didn't have the Endangered Species Act, the only bald eagles around today would be the ones on GOP belt buckles. Lori?
Wow. Okay. Thanks so much, G. You can follow her at G. Abby Lee. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. Moscow apologizes for misrepresenting VOA report. The U.S. envoy to the U.N. calls Russia a threat to the U.S. and world order. More U.S. churches become sanctuaries for at-risk immigrants. The U.N. urges Israeli-Palestinian calm and a return to talks. Find expanded coverage of these stories and more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. The Obama administration's favorite programs to aid other countries, such as climate change mitigation and contraception, could be in jeopardy after this week's inauguration. What appears more certain is all overseas assistance will come under scrutiny from a president and secretary of state with reputations in business for focusing on the bottom line. VOA correspondent Steve Herman has details from the State Department.
The challenge.
During his confirmation hearing, senators quizzed Secretary of State nominee Rex Tillerson about how to prevent assistance from the United States, the biggest global donor, from being siphoned or stolen by corrupt regimes.
If we're going to deliver aid into a country where we know this is a risk, what can we do in the execution of that, of the delivery of that aid?
For President-elect Donald Trump and his administration, the priority is likely to be on giving foreign aid to countries to enhance property rights, the rule of law, and to fight corruption.
Too much of the foreign aid given by the Western countries, U.S., OECD countries, has ended up only securing in power corrupt regimes.
Certain types of programs that are the ire of religious conservatives are also nearly certain to face review, with the White House and both houses of Congress now under Republican control.
Certainly there are worries, especially in areas of family planning and reproductive health, especially in the areas of HIV/AIDS, prevention and treatment.
But for the outgoing Secretary of State, the United States needs to do even more than its current spending of $34 billion for this fiscal year. John Kerry wants a new Marshall Plan, especially to ensure education for those at risk of being brainwashed by Muslim fundamentalists.
There are about 1.5 billion children in the world under the age of 15. Somewhere upwards of 400 million of them will not go to school. And that is a problem for all of us.
Throughout various administrations, diplomacy, development, and foreign aid have enjoyed strong bipartisan support. And diplomats here are somewhat optimistic that the new administration will continue to see sending aid overseas as valuable for America's security and economic interests. Steve Herman, VOA News, at the State Department.
You're listening to International Edition on VOA.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palca.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock, on the Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues now. Well, a nonpartisan U.S. congressional report said Tuesday that 18 million Americans could lose their health care insurance in the first year if the Republican-controlled U.S. Congress repeals President Obama's signature health care reforms without replacing them. The Congressional Budget Office said that with the repeal of the Affordable Care Act, popularly known as Obamacare, the number of people without insurance would grow to 32 million within a decade, and the cost of insurance premiums would jump sharply. President-elect Donald Trump, who assumes power on Friday, says that he wants insurance for everybody. Republican lawmakers have taken the first legislative steps in recent days to repeal the law, a goal they've had ever since Democrats approved it without the support of a single Republican vote in 2010. Well, joining me now is Dr. Joe White, author and professor at Case Western Reserve College, who specializes in budget politics and healthcare policies. Thank you so much for being with us. So tell us a little bit about why this law is so despised by Republicans.
A lot of people don't like it because the Democrats passed it, and they assume the Democrats must be doing something bad because the Democrats are for big government and, in these people's mind, reducing American freedom. The actual components of the Affordable Care Act are based on ideas that Mitt Romney, when he was governor of Massachusetts, basically endorsed and the Massachusetts passed first. So they are not radical ideas compared to insurance arrangements in any other country. They are relatively conservative, but the fact that the Democrats pushed it and that it did involve spending more money on a government program was enough for most Republicans to distrust it. There are some people who have real reasons of self-interest to oppose it, namely rich people, because a lot of the financing for the extra insurance for people came from raising taxes on people with incomes over a couple of $100,000 a year. There were people who could believe it would be a problem because of the other financing for it, which is the elderly who are already on Medicare, so people age 65 or over, who were told by the Republicans that Medicare was being cut and that their benefits were being cut by the Affordable Care Act, because some of the way that the financing for the Affordable Care Act was arranged was by plans to reduce spending in that Medicare program. But those reductions in spending on the Medicare program were all targeted on the prices paid to providers, prices paid to doctors and hospitals. And so were not actually benefit cuts at all, but they were cuts in spending for the Medicare program. And so a lot of the elderly were convinced by the Republicans that their insurance was being cut in order to pay for insurance for people who were generally, in many cases, poor and who Republicans could believe did not deserve to have the government help them. It's mostly a partisan attitude, a distrust of the Democrats by the Republicans. It's based more on ideology than on the actual provisions of the law. But, you know, if you were wealthier, then, in fact, the law did pay for expanding insurance for poorer people by taxing richer people. And if you were elderly and on the Medicare program, you could be convinced that these new benefits were provided for some people by cutting your benefits, although it did not, in fact, cut people's benefits.
Obviously, any new type of law that is so multifaceted, like the Affordable Care Act, I would think it would take several years at least to work out the kinks. Why are Republicans and opponents of the law so dead set on not just fixing whatever problems it might have instead of starting over?
They do not believe in taxing some people to provide insurance to other people if they can possibly help it. They do not believe in the government providing health insurance to people. That's the basic ideology. They believe that one of the reasons health insurance is so expensive in the United States is that people are forced to buy more than they want. And they really believe this. There are hardly any voters in the world who believe this. Most voters think the problem with health insurance is that it's not only expensive, but that it doesn't cover enough.
How difficult will it be to repeal?
We've got to distinguish between politically difficult and policy difficulties. They could vote to abolish the Social Security pension plan. They could vote for anything they want to vote for. It's the consequences that are the problem.
And what would those be?
Well, the consequences in terms of repealing the Affordable Care Act would be that the insurance market for the people who don't get insurance from their employer or directly from government programs, the big programs called Medicare and Medicaid, would collapse totally. Now, there are only about 20 million people getting insurance that way right now, out of the over 300 million people in the United States. The Affordable Care Act involves a small part of the American public. It involves the people who are not on Medicare, the program for the elderly and disabled, and the people who don't get insurance through their employers. This is a distinct minority of the American public. It also does not involve the people the poor people who were covered before through the Medicaid program. So all the Affordable Care Act did was it expanded the Medicaid program, which is a program run by both the individual states and the national government that provides insurance for poor people, and provided a new set of structures and extra set of government subsidies, government help, for people who don't get insurance from their employer or for the government and who therefore have to buy insurance from a health insurance company. And that's, you know, right now, you know, it was originally expected to cover between those two things about 33 million people, and it's covering maybe a little over 20 million because of the states that decided not to cooperate on the Medicaid part and because not everybody who they expected to sign up signed up. But this is a small part of the American insurance system. Repealing the Affordable Care Act will destroy, you know, that part of the American insurance system. I mean, there's really no good way to put back together again the extremely inefficient and inequitable system that had existed before. We would be lucky if we could get back to the situation in 2007, but it would be very hard to get there. Most people who don't have insurance through their employers or through government won't have insurance or will have extremely expensive and extremely low-value insurance.
All right. Well, we appreciate your perspective and your time. Dr. Joe White, author and professor at Case Western Reserve College, who specializes in budget politics and health care policies. Well, beloved American actress Betty White says the best thing about turning 95 is that she's still employed. The actress celebrated her 95th birthday on Tuesday.
I keep thinking, Betty, you're 95 years old. I'm so blessed with good health and faculty. I mean, you know, I've got memories and all that. You can't really expect that at 95. I am the luckiest old broad on 2 feet.
Following a series of high-profile celebrity deaths in 2016, one fan started a tongue-in-cheek fundraiser to help keep the Golden Girl star safe until 2017. White says fans spoil me rotten, and she adds that she really enjoys every minute of it. White was a trending topic on social media Tuesday thanks to all the well wishes from fans. A new song is getting a lot of attention on the charts. VOA's Border Crossings host Larry London joins International Edition's Sarah Williams to tell us all about it.
Today it's a duet with two pop princesses, Ariana Grande and Nicki Minaj, who are superstars in their own right, and they've combined for a brand new single. But before we play the new collaborative effort, I wanted to just tell you what's been going on in each of their lives. First of all, Ariana Grande, who recently referred to herself as the hardest working 23-year-old in the music business, just recently, within the last few weeks, was in a recording studio with John Legend, and they recorded the infamous Beauty and the Beast theme song for the upcoming new film that is coming out in February. It's going to star Emma Watson in the lead role as Beauty and the Beast. You know Emma Watson, of course. You know her from her Harry Potter roles. And so very excited about this to hear their version, because in the past, you know, Celine Dion had sung the Beauty and the Beast theme song in the cartoon version. Mm-hmm. And so now we've got Ariana Grande along with John Legend. So that's exciting. And Ariana's also at the same time getting ready for her tour for her new album, Dangerous Woman. She's going to be hitting the road in February, and that's going to take her around the world for the better part of a year or so. And we'll talk about Nicki Minaj and what she's been up to as well after we listen to Side to Side.
Been all night.
Ariana.
Been all day.
Nicki Minaj.
And by all, you got me walking side. I'm talking to you. See you standing over there.
Sounds like she's very busy.
Yes, Ariana Grande is busy. She is coming off winning some big awards this last year, 2016. She's excited about the future, of course, going out on tour for a new album, theme song to an upcoming film that a lot of people think is going to be a very, very big box office hit. It was many years ago in the cartoon form, Beauty and the Beast. I know my daughter loved it growing up watching it. So this is now the real-life Beauty and the Beast film. There's a bell, and there's a beast, there's the whole thing, and it's going to be coming out very, very soon. So I'm looking forward to seeing it and hearing the new song. Now, Nicki Minaj recently split up with Meek Mill. The two of them had been romantically together for quite a while. Nicki Minaj, a very, very famous R&B singer. And one of the things that she's doing is she's working on some new music. She's working on a film role. And she's keeping herself busy. Makeup line, clothing line. And so that's what's been going on with Nicki Minaj. Very, very busy woman. And so she managed to find time to put together this duet with Ariana Grande.
Yeah, they're both very busy.
Yes, they are. And in demand, like you.
All right. Thanks a lot, Larry. That's the host of Border Crossings, VOA's Larry London. Feeling like I want to rock with your body. And we don't got to think about nothing. I'm coming at you. Cause I know you got a bad reputation. Doesn't matter cause you give me temptation.
Well, you've been listening to International Edition. That does it for today's show, but you can find us anytime at voanews.com. Thanks so much for joining us. And thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Jimmy Cook. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In Iraq and Syria, U.S.-led coalition forces are making progress in the fight against ISIL, including in two crucial areas, killing its leaders and taking back territory. The U.S. Defense Department announced this month that a Syria-based Islamic State leader, Mahmoud al-Isawi, died in a coalition airstrike in Raqqa on December 31st. Al-Isawi was a long-standing ISIL member who controlled the flow of instructions and finances between ISIL-held areas and ISIL leaders and provided support to propaganda and intelligence outlets. Al-Isawi was also known to have facilitated trans-regional travel with other ISIL external operations coordinators and had a close relationship with Abd al-Basit al-Iraqi, the emir of ISIL's Middle East attack network, who was killed in a coalition airstrike on November 2, 2016. Al-Isawi's death brought the number of significant ISIL leaders killed last year to 16. These losses, as the Defense Department said, have degraded ISIL's transregional attack and facilitation network and are forcing ISIL fighters to increase their focus on internal security. In a press briefing from Baghdad, U.S. Air Force Colonel John Dorian, spokesman for Operation Inherent Resolve, also noted the progress being made in liberating territory from the terrorists. In Syria, he said, the Syrian Democratic Forces are continuing their advance to isolate Raqqa.
Since this current phase began on December 9th, the SDF have liberated more than 500 square miles of Syrian land, home to tens of thousands of people who have been brutalized by ISIL's rule.
In Iraq, Colonel Dorian noted, Iraqi security forces, with the help of coalition airstrikes and advisors, are making progress in their operation to liberate Mosul.
The city is completely surrounded, and the enemy doesn't have the ability to resupply or reinforce their fighters.
Colonel Dorian said, as difficult and dangerous as the fight for Mosul is and will be, time is not on the enemy's side. It's on the side of the Iraqi security forces, and they are going to retake Mosul. ISIL is a brutal and determined enemy, but the U.S.-led coalition and the local fighters it supports will keep intensifying the pressure until Syria and Iraq are free from ISIL's gruesome grip.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
is for, what's